and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to Maine Paranormal Radio. It's Saturday night. There's nothing better to do. So you are with the hottest ticket in town. Welcome to the show. As always, we have with us Robin.
Hello.
And Julie.
Hello.
And our guest tonight, we have our good friends from Spectral Intelligence Sciences coming on with us, Roman and Rebecca. They gave us a huge helping hand in a case we had last week. You heard us talk a little bit about it with Katie and Becca Boyd, who also helped us out. And, yeah, we're just going to wait for them to call in, and we're going to have one heck of a show. It's always fun when they come on.
They're great. You know, we really appreciated them helping us on our last investigation, and hopefully, I would say, maybe the next show or the one after, maybe we can give some more details to the case that we just recently did. We're stoked, though.
Yeah, it was. It's pretty interesting. We're still, I don't want to say we're completely baffled, but we're slowly unraveling the mystery of this one. It's definitely a layered deal. As we have been accused of posting quite a bit lately. But, you know, we put it out there and we let everybody decide what they think, and everybody's opinion is valid. So that's why we have it out there, because we can take it.
Definitely. And again, you know, regarding orbs and whatnot, we've had this discussion. You'll have to check out our earlier radio show in the archive regarding our orb discussion. But, yeah, it's really interesting. But, you know, the pictures that we have on our website, we stand by.
Yeah, and we only put them up if we have caught other paranormal activity in the area where we caught those particular orbs as well. So there seems to be a bit of a symbiotic relationship. My own personal thoughts are on it are you can have orb activity without a haunting, but very rarely do you have a haunting without some sort of orb activity.
It's a theory worth...
Oh, no, go ahead.
Oh, no, no, it's definitely, like you just said, it's, you know, it's something that we're doing a little bit of personal research on as well. You know, it's, like Jim said, it seems like there's a little bit of a symbiotic relationship going on there.
Yeah, basically, yeah, orbs are latent energy in the air that gives an entity something to manifest itself with. Yeah, but that's about it. That's all we're going to talk about as far as orbs go for this show, because a subject that seriously has been to death.
It has been, but I guess one thing to start off the show, Jim, is a little bit of housekeeping.
Yes, yes, you can contact any of us at www.maineghost.org, www.maineparanormalradio.com. You can find us on Facebook, search for Maine Ghosts. You can find me, Jim MGHS, or Robin, co-founder MGHS. Or Julie, co-founder MGHS. We're all on Facebook. You know, if you have an issue or whatever, you can contact us through there. You can contact us on MySpace. You can contact us through our websites. We're all over the place, literally and figuratively and mentally. And also the legal disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed on Maine Paranormal Radio are solely those of the people speaking them and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Maine Paranormal Radio, Maine Ghost Hunter Society, its members, or its clients. Unless I'm saying it or Robin's saying it, because we are members of Maine Ghost Hunter Society and Maine Paranormal Radio. So that covers all of that. I guess we're going to be chatting amongst ourselves for a little bit.
That's okay.
Yeah. What do we want to fight about tonight, Robin? You want to fight about Brett Favre again?
No, I don't want to fight about Brett Favre tonight.
Okay. How about... Okay, we only fight about sports.
Yeah, sports. I still can't stand Brock Lesnar.
Who can't you stand?
Brock Lesnar.
Oh. That's horrible. The man was heavyweight champion of the world in the WWE.
That means nothing, Jim.
Yeah, I know. But I like it. And he's the current MMA UFC heavyweight champion.
That's true, but, you know, I was hoping Amir would, you know, get him, but it looks like Shane Carwin kind of took that over. But anyway, we're totally deviating from the paranormal world here, but...
That's all right. You know what else is paranormal?
What?
people moving up from Tennessee and being excited about inches of snow in the middle of frickin' April.
Indeed. Looks like Roman and Rebecca are in.
Fantastic.
How you guys doing?
Hey, Roman.
Hey.
Rebecca.
Yes.
Hey, guys.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be back on. How are both of you doing?
We are well. Well, okay, I can say I am well. I really shouldn't speak for Robin, should I?
I'm well as well.
She's excited because we got 2 inches of snow today.
Oh, okay, so you guys got hit by the storm, huh?
Yeah, we did. It didn't stick around, though, so that made me happy.
Well, it's pretty nice out here in California right now, but...
Sorry.
Sorry.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I'll take earthquakes over snow any day. Okay, so why don't we jump into it real quick here? Because we've got some pretty deep subjects to cover, and I think Rebecca emailed them to me a couple of days ago. I think they dovetail themselves into each other quite well. So let's start with what I see to be the most dangerous part of anything that, you know, any of us do in the paranormal world, having to do with, you know, the demonic, is how do people invite them in? And it happens, you know, sometimes it just happens quite innocently where somebody doesn't realize what they're doing, and other times it's, you know, very, what the heck's the word I'm working for, deliberate. So why don't the deliberate people, I don't think we should help because they screwed themselves. yeah. But why don't we talk a little bit how people do it unintentionally? Because I've heard quite a few different things about that.
Sure. One of the things I want to make as a side note, real quick comment about the people who do it deliberately, is a lot of times we are contacted by the people who've done it deliberately. And, you know, they want all the positives, you know, whatever positives those are from the contact with these spirit beings, but they don't want the negatives. And so they want to continue doing the behavior they're doing, but they don't want to stop, you know, overall contact with these entities. So, you know, we'll kind of go more into that a little bit later on. But the people who indirectly get them into their lives, there are so many different ways that this can happen.
I think it starts with desire.
You know,
or intent, attention, what you focus on.
You know, kind of like, you know, one of the areas that we find happens quite often with a lot of people that find these entities in their lives is, you know, they develop an unnatural focus or desire or obsession with something. Last time we talked a little bit about, you know, demonic obsession, you know, and, you know, any high degree of obsession or unnatural level of focus on anything is unhealthy. I mean, in a psychological sense, in a physical sense, in a mental sense, and that tends to cause you to have chinks in your armor. It opens up spaces for things to get in. And if you aren't filled with something good, then you'll be filled with something evil.
That makes a lot of sense. I felt the need to. I heard this story. Brad Steiger told it. I believe it was in his book, Vampires, True Vampires, or whatever. Oh God, I'm so horrible with titles of books lately. We had a guest on, and I couldn't even remember the name of her book when I introduced her last week. I felt like such a jerk. But he told this story on the Paranormal Podcast with Jim Harold, and if anybody hasn't heard that, it's fantastic. It's basically like book authors who come on and talk for half an hour about their book. But this story I told Julie and Robin before we went on the air, there was this boy who went off to school. His father was, I believe, a Baptist minister, and he was very, you know, very devout Christian. Never really went out, you know, drinking and taking care of, you know, doing what college people do. You know, he sat and he focused on his studies. And one night, you know, it was after finals. They had a really rough semester, so he decided to go out with the boys that night. So they went to a bar and proceeded to get pretty well tanked. And this woman came in, who was apparently just a knockout. And they all went up to her, you know, how you doing, baby, whatever, and using their best pickup lines. And of course, she blew them all off, except for the boy who was, you know, really out for the first time, and she took a special interest in him, and they ended up leaving the bar and whatever occurred, and then, you know, the boy went home. He'd come home late at night, and given the fact that his father was such a, you know, really a stickler for, you know, upstanding morals and certain, you know, types of behavior, his mother heard him come home very late at night, and she decided to run a little bit of interference for him, and she went to the bathroom because he had gone to the bathroom, and, you know, she said, hello, you know, how's it going, are you in there, are you okay, and a woman's voice came back to her, you know, basically saying in not so nice terms, leave me alone. So
hey,
the mother being... Yeah, so the mother being, you know, oh my God, he brought a woman home, opened the door, but there was nobody in the bathroom but her son. And she, you know, was talking with him, and the woman's voice kept coming out of the boy's mouth. So they called in whoever, you know, this went on for so long, went through all the psychiatric hoops and whatever. Finally they called in, I guess, an exorcist. And this priest had happened to spend a certain amount of time in the Egyptian area, and the woman's voice kept speaking in a certain dialect that he recognized because of his time spent in the Middle East. So they called somebody else in who knew how to speak that particular dialect, and it turned out that this entity was like a 2,000-year-old, 2,500-year-old spirit that was a body jumper. You know, it mainly focused on women. Because that's where it was most comfortable, but because it had seen the boy out drinking and saw a weakness because of the fact that he was tanked, jumped into this body and took over.
Yeah.
So, a lot of people, I think, don't realize if you use any sort of mind-altering whatever, you know, I God knows that I've been out at the bars myself quite a bit when I was in college. But that is one way that they see an opening to get in is through the use of particular drugs and alcohol.
Yeah, because when I used to go out and party a lot, I found that drinking alcohol made it easier for me to slip into trance states, especially like when I'd be out dancing and stuff. Because people think that alcohol is so like, oh, it's nothing, it's just a beer. But it's like, not really, because you let down your defenses.
Exactly, and actually, a very, very large number of people that end up having the demonic enter their lives, do it by one form or another of drug abuse, you know, whether it be alcohol or methamphetamine. Methamphetamines is a really big one. Somehow when an individual loses sleep for an extended period of time, like goes beyond about 4 or 5 days, it really opens them up. But, you know, there's so many different ways. I mean, that is certainly, you know, drugs and alcohol are absolutely one of the ways that they find that chink in your armor. Sometimes, you know, it's a psychological chink. Some people can get overly obsessed with any particular subject, and it does not matter what the subject is. What matters is that they become unnaturally obsessed with it.
And that becomes the weakness.
And that becomes a weakness. Yeah. And then the entity uses that as the invitation to enter in because, you know, they do follow very specific rules. And, you know, ordinarily they need to be invited in. But the thing that most people don't understand is it doesn't need to be a vocal invitation like someone knocking at your door and asking to come in.
Like, it's not like with a vampire, like, yes, you're invited to come into my house.
Now, have you heard of the theory that negative entities and demons and whatnot prey on the mentally ill, using them as a cloak? You know, friends and family know that they're mentally ill, and, you know, I guess it wouldn't take those claims, you know, very...
I think that's true with schizophrenics.
You think it's true for schizophrenics?
Yeah, because have you ever noticed that a lot of schizophrenics, there's like always a religious theme to a lot of their hallucinatory experiences, and I think that's kind of a telltale sign of them being abused in another form.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I really agree with that. I think that a lot of individuals with various forms of mental illnesses definitely are attacked by the supernatural and demons in particular. Not to say that there isn't a, you know, there are, isn't actual mental illness. It absolutely is true that there is mental illness. But I think that possibly in the future we may come to a point where doctors will start to realize that some of these things we thought were mental illnesses actually were just a higher level of sensitivity to, you know, the spirit realm and to, you know, levels of vibrational energy that ordinary people can't pick up. You know, in the case of schizophrenics, I've known quite a few schizophrenics, and ordinarily the hallucinations have, the audio hallucinations, are almost, you know, they're very uniform in the sense of what's talked about in the hallucinations, what the voices say to them, and it's very, very close to what a person that is under demonic oppression and possession deals with. So it leads me to believe that at least, you know, possibly some schizophrenics may actually be picking up on the spirit world and are tormented by it, because they will say the exact same things. They'll say that, I mean, it's very common. They'll say that the voices are telling them to do very specific things. All they talk about in their head is filth. I one time said, you know, why is it that you don't run into a whole, you know, why doesn't like maybe 50% of the schizophrenics have happy voices in their head, you know, that tell them that they're loved and everything's wonderful? Why is it always that the voices are filthy and vicious and nasty and evil and horrible, you know?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I saw a thing, I want to say it was a couple of years ago. They actually were doing CAT scans of schizophrenics while they were having attacks. When they would, I don't know if they induced them, but they just kept them in MRI machines until they had an attack. And it was a certain part of the brain that is related to...
Timing part of the brain, or
It was in the front part of their brain, but that would kind of go haywire when they started hearing the voices or whatnot, and it has it's a part of the brain that centers around our belief systems as well,
yes.
And that's I think they ended up stimulating it. That's what they did,
yeah.
And the people claimed to have religious experiences while they were under stimulation. They,
correct.
They heard
and,
God.
And actually, along with that, that's a very good point. I actually remember reading parts of that study. And as far as I can recall, I believe that they also found that the areas of their brain that process actual voices and audio sounds coming in from the outside was fully active during that time frame, even though, you know, to the outside, there wasn't any actual audio input coming in. So, you know, it was kind of confusing them because they weren't sure why that was happening, because, you know, there's a different area of our brain that lights up when we hear our own inner voice. You know, so that's a very interesting point.
Okay, so, all right, we just got off the metaphysical to explain the physical. So let's get into the idea that if we take the schizophrenics out of it and we just go straight to people who are suffering from, you know, demonic issues, the way that people kind of get fooled by it, where they think it's Aunt Gracie or their grandmother, like the different disguises that they kind of wear to get in and build trust.
Exactly, and that's actually the area we wanted to kind of go into in the, being the dangers of being gullible when dealing with the paranormal and the spirit world. You know, these entities are masters of disguise. They've existed for, you know, thousands of years. It's not too much of a stretch that they could talk to other entities that have been around your family members or friends who passed away and know enough about them to be able to, you know, disguise themselves as these individuals. You know, in addition to that, you know, when people reach out to the spirit world and try to contact it, you know, we don't have all of the senses that are really necessary to deal with that world. I kind of like to illustrate it as, you know, an individual walking blindfolded through the Tenderloin in San Francisco. You know, you're going to walk up to people, and people will talk to you, certainly. But you can't really see them. you know, and they can tell you they're anything, and some of them will pretend to be your friends, but, you know, a lot of them probably just want to rob you. So, you know, that's one of the
areas. They probably don't know what the Tenderloin. The Tenderloin is like Central Park.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a really bad neighborhood in San Francisco.
Yeah, it's the worst area of San Francisco. So, you know, just any bad area of town. I mean, you know, we're dealing with a realm of existence that we don't have full knowledge of, that we're only, you know, just now over the last, you know, 20 or 30 years, people are getting more and more focused on actually looking at it seriously. And, you know, there are even some scientists that are starting to look at it now over the last 10 years, but there's so much we don't know. So, you know, these entities, you know, thrive on deception. Everything about them is about deceiving and lying and destroying. So, you know, they will take whatever form is necessary to get to a person. That is, in one of the easiest forms, is the form of a child. That's why so often you see that there is, you know, it's a little boy or a little girl who claims that they may have drowned or maybe died of a cold or something of that nature, and they just want someone to play with. And that is usually what will cause a person to open up. Now, who do they usually reach out to? It's usually the individual in the household who has something missing, has a hole in their heart, you know, or in their life. Maybe their spouse passed away. Maybe they had a child that passed away.
Or maybe it's a mother with the empty nest syndrome, or, you know, she misses her babies and they're all grown up now, and there's a little ghost that needs her all of a sudden. So convenient.
So,
yeah, okay,
you know,
how convenient for that to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, because, you know, a lot of times, and I'm sure you guys have seen this in your investigations, a lot of times the person in the house who is stronger-willed is a very large amount of time not the one who's contacted. Not to say that everyone who's contacted is weak-willed, but just to say that, you know, because when the person's contacted by a ghost, they'll contact whoever will receive them or whoever can pick them up. But demons themselves, when we're talking about the subject of evil entities, they go for the weak ones. They go for the people who are hurt or injured or have a hole in some way in their life. And those are the ones you'll usually find are the first people who are contacted when they either move into a house that a demon is present at, or when the person, through their daily contact with the world, happens to pick one up by, you know, invitation or by being tricked into.
Well, I mean, how many cases have you heard where it's always either the female in the house, the woman, or the children? So they're the more receptive. You know, the husband is usually, you know, he's got other things to worry about. He doesn't spend a lot of time alone in the house listening to the creaks and the noises, and he just can't be bothered by that. So they prey on the wife and the children, you know, because they're just the easier target.
Yeah, John Zaffis in November is opening his own little museum of haunted possessions, and I happened to listen to an interview with him, and the amount of, like, children's toys that he's got there, I guess I haven't seen everything, but I've heard that just the amount of, like, kids' toys he has there is it's kind of disturbing, because, you know, if you're going to go in, what's the easiest way to get trust is to go on through something that a child plays with every day.
Exactly.
Something that's cute.
Yeah, yeah. He has this one.
Dude, how can it be evil?
Yeah, he has this one toy. It's on his website, so I think I can talk about it. It's a ventriloquist doll.
Oh, I saw that. That was so creepy.
Yeah, Simon. Simon, I think, is his name. And, you know, the mother bought it for her child and whatever. And the kid started asking these weird questions, and the mother said, "Well, where are you getting these questions from?" And he said, "You know, Simon wants to know." And she just kind of played it off as a kid playing with a toy until she was in the bedroom one day. She saw the little boy talking, and then Simon was talking back, but the mouth was moving, and it was completely across the room from the boy.
Wow.
If I was a child and my mom got that for me, I would be like, what did I do wrong? You know, that doll was so okay. It was creepy.
Yeah, yeah, it is a crazy-looking doll. But
that's exactly what they do, though. They'll take over a toy. And even then, because, you know, not only will a child be more apt to play with this cursed object, but adults will, too. And, you know, the thing that most people don't realize is actually just playing with it could be an invitation to them. You know, picking it up, taking it into your house, touching it, playing with it, is an unspoken invitation. And that is, once again, you know, one of the ways that they get into your life. You know, it does not require a verbal acquiescence to them coming in. You know, it just requires bringing something home, accepting something into your life, taking something on. You know, you'll have people who, say, are collectors, right? And they'll go around and they'll collect all kinds of antiques and old items. And a lot of times, the interesting thing is these people will talk about these items like they're alive, and will actually talk to the items. So if one of these items then happens to have a demon attached to it, they assign this item life. It actually has a spiritual entity with it, and that actually invites it right into their life.
Yeah, a lot of people, we haven't come across anything like that yet, but I've heard stories where people will say, well, I picked it up, and it felt kind of creepy. Why'd you buy it? Leave it where it is. If it feels creepy, leave it alone.
I'm very, very careful about bringing old things into my house. Especially, you know, doing what we do. These entities are very vindictive, and they take things very personal. And so, you know, I actually, after the last roughly 5 or 6 years, I do not bring old items into my house anymore. You're not going to see a spectral intelligence museum of retrieved items. I'm not saying that when an item that's cursed or has a demon attached to it, you should burn it, because that can actually cause problems. But it should be gotten rid of, preferably.
The best way to deal with it is to either bury it or throw it into a moving body of water.
Correct. Absolutely. But not to bring it home. You know, that because what is that? That's inviting them into your house. I mean, because in that case, you know that this item has a demon attached to it. So you knowingly are bringing it into your house. So I would never advise something like that.
Now, Roman, how many cases would you say you guys had, or how prevalent is it where a homeowner moves into a home and the entity is already there? Not attached to a person, per se, but the demon or entity was already in the home itself.
It's actually very prevalent. I'd say probably about 40%, 40 to 50% of the time. You know, and that is because, you know, so many things have happened at various houses, especially older houses. How can we tell? I mean, and it may not even be something as obvious as a Satanist or a satanic or Luciferian cult living there and doing rituals. It could be, you know, a person with an unnatural obsession that passed away in the house. It could be a lot of tragedy there. It could be a lot of child abuse and spousal abuse that went on at the house, or drug abuse. So many different ways. So yes, I mean it's very common.
Because entities are drawn to those tragic activities, because that's energy for them to utilize for whatever purpose they have, and that's, you know, it's not
going to
go to waste as far as
they're
concerned.
Yeah, and once again, like we talked about last time, Loosh, you know, wherever there's a site that provided a large degree of quality, you know, high-level Loosh for them, high-level dark spiritual energy, they will remain there. And they actually have a claim to that.
They're very territorial.
Yeah, they're very territorial. You know, just like we see, like when someone brings home some rocks from, say, Hawaii, and then things start happening. Entities of that nature are extremely territorial, and they don't leave easily.
Sounds like some of the groups we've had
here. I know.
Yeah.
And that's, I believe we've only had one particular case, other than possibly this case, well, clearly this case that we've been working on recently, where the home actually did have that extensive history of satanic ritual, Ouija board mass, Ouija board sessions, seances, you know, different things of that nature, you know. I mean, and the home was over 100 years.